sometimes controversial, always politically incorrect, and pro-life without exception, without compromise, and without apology. It's the Pro-Life America Podcast with your hosts, Sarah Waits, and the president of Life Dynamics, Mark Crutcher.
Hey guys, we're back, as you heard, as we threatened you with in the open. I'm Mark Crutcher, and...
Do we really threaten them in the open? I don't remember there being threats.
That's the voice of my worthy co-host, Sarah Waits.
Hello, everyone.
Sarah, you brought up an interesting thing that you came across the other day.
Yeah, so I don't typically bring up stuff that I find from Medium. Medium is a website where people post articles, but this article piqued my attention, and this has to do with something that I've seen happening a lot more recently, which is the estrangement and falling out families and friends are having over political issues. And the title of this article says, "I was uninvited to a wedding because I am pro-choice." She writes that in 2016, she put a post on her private Facebook about abortion and said that an embryo doesn't have any rights, nor does it have bodily autonomy. And the post featured a picture of chewed up bubble gum with the idea that the bubble gum is supposed to represent a, quote, 6-week fetus. So anyway, she goes on to admit that maybe the image was jarring and maybe the language was a tad strong, which I tend to think was probably an understatement. But anyway, it turns out that the aunt of her then boyfriend, now husband, saw this and sent her messages saying that she did not agree with this. She was very disgusted by her post and said she was no longer invited to her wedding, which was in a few months. Now, prior to this event, this person and the aunt had a very good relationship. And she wrote, "My heart stopped beating when I read her message. I was heartbroken that this woman who I had always really admired and cared for was speaking so horribly to me." This is just one of many articles that I've seen along a similar vein, especially since the 2016 election. For example, Jocelyn Kelly, the Associate Director of Research for Pew Research, she says that nearly 80% of Americans now have, quote, just a few or no friends at all across the aisle, according to their research. And she goes on to add, Democrats are a little bit more likely to say they'd end a friendship, but Republicans may be less likely to say that they have friends on the other side. Compare that to a Reuters and Ipsos poll of 6,426 people, and it showed that 16% said they have stopped talking to a family member or friend because of the elections. 13% of respondents said they had ended a relationship with a family member or close friend over the election. And that both of those statistics shows a rise from previous years.
Well, back when I was doing the Life Activist seminars many years ago, and then I would be invited to do speeches and banquets and conventions and things like that. One of the most common questions that I would get from audiences was, or comments, not necessarily always a question. People would say something like, "My sister and I are estranged from each other. We grew up together. We are kids together. We've always been close, but we don't talk anymore because of the abortion issue."
Yeah.
Or they'll say, "I have a sister who's pro-choice and nothing I say can make her even question it, much less change her views."
Yeah.
And I'd also heard stories, and I had seen a couple of real life examples of this, of divorces happening over this issue. And one of the things I used to tell people about this is, look, this is part of the price of being pro-life. This is part of the price you pay. And let's remember something, that there's a scriptural basis for this. Jesus said, "Don't think I came to bring peace. I didn't. I bring a sword. And your enemies will be members of your own family."
It says, "I will separate you, father from son."
Father from son, husband from wife.
Yeah.
And so there is a basis for this. We may not like it. My brother and I are in that situation.
It's hard to hear.
Yeah, we were only 3 years apart. And of course, we were kids together and grew up together and did all the things that brothers do together. The shenanigans that boys get into. And we got into our share. Not me so much.
You? But, no.
Not
say
me,
it
but my brother.
So.
He was much worse than I was.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
I was the older brother that had to be the voice of reason.
And yes. And that 3 years, all that wisdom that came with it.
Right. But anyway, we hardly talk. I mean, it's very rare for us to get together and talk, even just over the phone. And again, that's part of the price you pay. And I personally don't think there's any solution to that. I think this is just going to be the way it is. And we all know that our country right now is bitterly divided over a bunch of issues.
I think the estrangement and ending friendships, I think this has gotten so much worse over the last 4 years as it has been previously to that. And I think it's because politics has been made extremely personal, and both sides to some degree, but especially among the left, demonizes the other side. And it's like, if you vote for this person, you don't just happen to support border restrictions or, you know, the Second Amendment. No, it's you're a racist, or you're a homophobe, or you're a sexist, or you're a misogynist. And when you start doing that, I mean, it's easy to understand why friendships and stuff are falling apart, because there's no room for a friendship with somebody that you're basically saying is a vile individual for voting this way or supporting a certain policy.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like I am negative, but I don't think there is a solution to this. And I know from my own attitude, and I've talked to other people about this in small groups before, when I was out doing seminars and banquets and things like that. And I would make a statement like, I don't have any friends who are pro-choice. And to be honest with you, I don't want any. And I'd have people say, you know, I've had that same sentiment. I didn't want to say it because it sounds so terrible to say, I won't have anything to do with somebody who doesn't agree with me. I'm going to make the point that this is not a political issue.
Abortion, yeah.
This is a life and death issue. And when somebody says that it's okay to kill these babies, I really look at that person and I say, you know, I don't know what else I have in common with you, but I don't care what else I have in common with you.
I think abortion is very different. I could see somebody who's opposed to open borders having a friendship with someone who's pro-open borders.
Right.
A lot easier than somebody who's pro-life being friends with somebody who's, say, vehemently pro-choice. Because the principles underlying those two positions are radically different. It's about who do you identify as a human being. Now, I don't think it's impossible, but I think it's a lot harder.
Well, I think it would be similar to, let's say you had, back in Nazi Germany, you had a guy that ran a concentration camp who lived next door to a Jewish family that they hadn't arrested yet and hadn't hauled off to a concentration camp. If the Jewish family knows what's going on, which they did, if they know what's going on, do you see them getting together at night and having a barbecue in the backyard together?
Probably not.
Probably not. And that's the way I feel about this. And I want to make another point about this. If you look at all this polarization that has taken place, I mean, it's to the point that it's not just issue driven, it's personality driven.
Yeah.
And you'll have people who hate you because you voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
For no other reason. And if you were to say to that person, well, what position is it that Donald Trump holds that you so adamantly are opposed to that you would hate me because I voted for him? And they can't give you one. It's a personality deal. They don't like Trump, so they don't like
you. They'll say that he's racist, that he's sexist, that he's homophobic, and that all these policies are dangerous to marginalized groups. But there's not. It's not really followed up generally with anything else.
And of course,
that's the be-all, end-all.
Nobody is more marginalized than the unborn child.
Yeah.
Over 60 million of them have been so marginalized they were butchered.
Yeah.
But the point I want to make here is, if you look at all of these divisions that we have now, and you start going backwards and saying, let's find out where all this began. It began with Roe versus Wade. You know, we've talked about it here before. Abortion affects every issue in America. Everyone.
Yeah.
People think you're nuts when you say that, but you can clearly make that point. If somebody wants to come on here and argue with me about that, I'll be happy to make that point and show them how it affects every other issue. But the fact is, if you trace these things backwards, you get back to the legalization of abortion. Prior to that, you had people that had political disagreements, but they didn't hate each other over them. Abortion was the one that set this thing in motion to where you would say, like I say, I don't have any friends that are pro-choice and I don't want any. You know, I can remember when I would, back when I was doing seminars and speeches and all that sort of thing, I'd be on an airplane coming back from a speech or going to one, and somebody sitting beside me, just idle chit-chat that you get into in a situation. You're going to be sitting next to this person for 3 hours, and you might talk to them. I got to the point where I purposely avoided talking to anybody because I know that one of the questions is, well, where are you headed? And then the next question, well, are you going there for business or pleasure? mm-hmm. go and give a speech. Oh, really? What do you speak on? Mm-hmm. Right there, you got an issue.
Yeah.
I had a few of those experiences, and I got to where I just avoided talking to anybody in order to avoid that unpleasant situation. Because all of a sudden, if I find out this person's a raging pro-abort, I don't even want to be sitting next to them.
Well, you don't know what's going to happen.
No.
If the videos online are any proof, anything could happen.
I mean, I lived through the Vietnam War era. Mm-hmm. I mean, where you had riots on college campus. You had four kids killed at Kent State University mm-hmm. by the National Guard. And you had bitter divisions, mm-hmm. but not near as bitter as over abortion. I was a teenager then, and at that time, the kind of standard thing to be, if you were young, was to be anti-American, anti-war, mm-hmm. anti-Republican, anti all these other things. And I wasn't. Mm-hmm. But I still had friends that were. My best friend mm-hmm. was one of these people on the other side. I mean, mm-hmm. a hardcore hippie leftist. As long as I knew him, that's the way he was.
Well, I would argue that the left has changed dramatically from what it was then to what it is now.
Well, yeah, they were true liberals in that point. Now mm-hmm. they're just Marxist.
Yeah, it's like, as Dave Rubin says, the left has become regressive, not progressive.
Right.
You know, I think it did start at that time, but I think what's really ratcheted things up is I think that the left particularly has embraced identity politics, and to some degree, both sides have tried to weaponize emotions in order to get voters on issues. And so when you do that, it makes things far more personal. And so every 4 years or every 2 years, you'll see this ratcheting up of the emotions on stuff so that people will get elected. It's like, well, you can't vote for these people. They are going to set women back. They are going to do this, this, and this. And when you have that kind of message for so long, I think this intrinsic personalization of politics and demonizing people who feel different is just an inevitable result of
that.
Well,
and you also know that those people are raising their kids with that attitude.
Yeah.
That's another issue that's going to be here for a long time.
Yeah.
And all I'm saying is that abortion is the issue that started this ball down the hill. And it's gained momentum ever since then, and I see no evidence of it backing off. I think what you have to do mm-hmm. is just say, this is the way it's going to be. It'd be like if somebody said, I lost a leg in a motorcycle wreck. Mm-hmm. How do I get beyond this? Or how do I deal with this? Well, don't wait around for your leg to grow back, because it's not. Mm-hmm. Learn how to live in the environment that you now live in, which is you're a one-legged person.
Yeah.
In this case, you know, if you say, well, how do I get my sister, who's a pro-abort, for us to just set this aside and not think about it, you probably can't.
Mm-hmm. You can try not talking politics, but in this day and age,
that's virtually impossible.
That's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just have to play the hand that's dealt you. Mm-hmm. But again, I would go back to the scriptural reference here and just remember that this is part of it. I mean, let's not forget, what happened to all the people that followed Jesus while he was here on earth? Mm-hmm. What happened to the disciples that Jesus had?
Yeah.
So if you get into this thing to be popular, mm-hmm. even with your own family, I mean, you're in the wrong place. Mm-hmm. You got to decide whether the relationships that you miss are more important than your commitment to the unborn. You got to choose one or the other. They're not going to let you have both.
Yeah.
You know, you say, well, I'm going to try to convince them. The vast majority of these people are not convincible.
Well, here's the thing. It's one thing to have conversations with people, but if you go into a friendship with the expectation that you're going to change their mind or you're going to open their eyes, first off, you're setting a really high bar that'll be easily heartbreaking to you, because
you're not going to jump.
You can't go into relationships expecting to change people, first off. But two, there's a possibility that you may never change their mind. And if you're not okay with it, then you shouldn't be friends with that person.
Don't invest a lot in that relationship.
It's like anything else in a relationship. Don't go into it with the idea that you're going to change somebody. Either you like them for who they are or you don't.
I've spoken about this subject a few times. It's off the abortion issue. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons that marriages fail. You know, I've had people ask me, even recently as this past week, I had a discussion with somebody about this, about my wife and I, Tulane, and I've been married 51 years. Mm-hmm. They said, how do you stay with somebody for 51 years? You know, how do you make a marriage last that long?
Love, patience, and forgiveness.
Well,
and compromise.
There's a lot of reasons. And some of them are funny, but some of them are true. You know, I say one of the issues you have to decide, and I'm very adamant about this, in a marriage, you have to decide what issues are hills worth dying for.
Yes, exactly.
Because I tell you what, marriages break up all the time over arguments that neither person thinks is important.
Mm-hmm.
But they become important. They are assigned an importance beyond what they're due.
Yeah. When you argue to win, both sides lose. Because you may win the argument, but you've lost something more important.
Well, I draw an analogy to that. If you're driving down the street and all of a sudden your light turns green, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you can tell a car is coming from the into the intersection and they're going to run the light.
Do you keep going even though you have the green?
Right. You have every right to continue going because your light's green. And if you continue going, the chances are you're going to be dead right.
Yeah, you're going to be right, but you're going to be in an accident.
You're going to be dead. A good chance you'll be dead. So you'll be dead right. Is that what you want? And the same thing is true with these kind of arguments. And the same thing is true with this stuff of being estranged from people that you like or friends or not wanting to make new friends. I mean, I find myself sometimes reluctant to even engage with new people that I meet.
Because you don't know what's going to happen.
Because I don't know if all of a sudden they're going to say something that tells me, oh, this person's a pro-abort, or I'm going to say something that tells them I'm pro-life, and we're down the track at that point.
Well, let me ask you this. What advice would you give for somebody who is pro-life or conservative and has a liberal or pro-choice sibling, and it hasn't gotten to that estrangement point yet, but they're not sure what to do? I mean, what advice would you give to them?
I don't know what advice to give them. I mean, how can I give advice to somebody over an issue that I so totally failed in that that I have a brother I don't speak to?
Yeah.
I mean, we do speak. Maybe once a year we'll talk over the phone or something. Around Christmas, one of us will call the other one. Something like that. But on a daily basis, we don't. I know a woman who's pro-life who still lives with her mother and daddy, and they're pro-aborts. I cannot even comprehend how that's possible, but she does it. But anyway, you have to accept the fact that for the most part, you're not going to change these people's minds. That's just the reality.
I think we should go into every discussion that we have with somebody, whether they're friends or not, about abortion. You have to accept or have in the back of your mind the possibility that you're not going to change their mind. And you have to be okay with that to some degree, or else it's just going to eat you alive.
If you can't deal with that, you know, and it's like I used to tell when I was a manager of a car dealership and I'd have salesmen working for me. And I'd say, look, the national statistics are that you're only going to sell about one out of five people that you talk to.
So it means all the other four people.
So the other four people are going to reject you.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out and talk to a customer, you spend 3 or 4 hours with a customer and you demo them every car on the lot, and then they wind up not buying. If you let that destroy you, if you let that affect you, you know what's going to happen?
You're going to tank your other sales.
The next person that you talk to,
you're going to bring that baggage in with you.
I say, if you can't get up and dust yourself off and act like that one didn't even exist, then you can't make it in this business.
Yeah.
And to a certain degree, that's true throughout life. And, you know, this idea of changing people, we touched on a minute ago about in the case of marriage. I think that the fundamental problem with marriages is, and there's a male aspect of this and a female aspect of it. Women find a guy that they think is basically moldable and they can turn him into what they want him to be. And they'll say, well, he's not perfect, but over time, you know, in other words, they marry a guy hoping they can change him into what they want him to be. They're not going to. Guys go in there and they'll marry some cute little 22 or 23 year old.
Thinking she'll never change.
Thinking she'll never change. This is going to be the way she is when she's 60. Well, no, that's not going to be the way she is when she's 60. Let me tell you.
Well, I think one thing for marriages, and maybe I'm completely wrong, but I feel like the things that you're seeing today with marriages break up, I think a lot of times the important things are not discussed. So they just assume the other person has the same opinion on some of these really important issues. If you're not 100% on the same page on those issues or talk about them.
On the important issues.
Yeah, on the important issues. Yeah, absolutely.
On the important things.
Like how many people probably think to talk about their views on abortion before they get married or start really dating?
How many times have we seen the situation where, let's say, a couple are dating and she's cradle Catholic and this guy's a Baptist? And their attitude is because they're so in love and their little hearts are fluttering and all that kind of nonsense. this will work itself out. We've talked about it, and we're going to, well, let me tell you something. It's not going to just quote unquote work itself out in most cases. You better have a plan. Mm-hmm. And it's going to really raise its head the moment you have your first child.
Exactly. Because how are you going to raise the child?
Right. And we used to have a young lady that worked here years ago, and she was hardcore cradle Catholic, mm-hmm. came from a good Catholic family in Illinois. Mm-hmm. She fell head over heels in love with a guy who was divorced, and he was a Mormon. And I asked her.
That's a very big difference.
Yeah, and I asked her about it, and she said, well, we've talked about it. We're going to work it out. You know, these are the kind of things that love will make right once we're married. No, you better.
We'll work it out is not a viable solution.
I don't know whatever happens.
She may assume we'll work it out means that she'll just eventually convert and that'll be the end of it.
So she's marrying a guy that's several years older than her, that's divorced and a Mormon. Mm-hmm. And she's a cradle Catholic. Now, they moved and I don't know what happened. Mm-hmm. But if I have to bet, I'm going to say they're not still together. Unless one of them converted.
Yeah. My grandmother was Church of Christ. My grandfather was a Catholic when she met him.
Yeah.
It did not stay that way.
Right.
They were married for a very long time. He converted from Catholicism to...
Because he got tired of listening to it.
I don't know that he was a really devout Catholic, to be perfectly honest.
Well, my wife and I talked about this stuff. And of course, she was Southern Baptist and mm-hmm. raised Southern Baptist. And I was raised Southern Baptist. And so that was not an issue. And we had very similar outlooks and mm-hmm. very similar ways we were going to raise children when we got them. And so that wasn't an issue. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you, let's say she had been... Mm-hmm. It could have even been another Protestant denomination. It could have been Church of Christ.
Oh, yeah. There have been plenty of relationships and issues that have happened between just Baptist and Church of Christ marriages.
Oh, absolutely. Or Baptist and anybody, or any two, it's Methodist and Church of Christ. Yeah, yeah. The Baptist are the worst. We're the worst, but nonetheless.
For anybody who's listening, we're just kidding. Right.
But it's a very dicey thing to settle here, but I'm telling you, you can think I'm nuts if you want to, which I'm sure a lot of people do, but this whole thing started with abortion.
Yeah.
You can tie all of these issues backwards, and what you see is that prior to the legalization of abortion, we did not have this sort of division in America. I can remember back in the 60s when you had pretty aggressive political races. These were classic liberals, not godless Marxists like what we see today, mm-hmm. but classic liberals.
Yeah.
A good example of this would have been Hubert Humphrey. Hubert Humphrey was a liberal Democrat from Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And you could sit, watch Hubert Humphrey on television and say, and look at the people that he was running against mm-hmm. and say, you know, where does he come up with this? This guy, this is loony what he believes. Mm-hmm. But he's a good guy. He's a good, decent person.
He's a good guy, but we just ultimately disagree on how to get to the right solution to the issues.
Right.
Yeah.
We both want to get to the same place. We just have a different roadmap to get there.
Yeah.
But he's a good guy. And we didn't demonize him. And Hubert Humphrey was a good guy. Mm-hmm. We don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
Let's just say Donald Trump is going to be the nominee for the Republicans. And I'm not sure that's true, but let's just say it is true. Whoever it is that the Democrats put up, and I can't even begin to imagine that they're going to stick with this nitwit we have right now. They're starting to run away from him. He's not even 2 years into his term.
I've seen even CNN throwing him under the bus.
But let me tell you right now, I don't know who the nominee is going to be. But let's say Donald Trump is the Republican and Mr. X or Miss X is mm-hmm. the Democrat. Mr. or Miss X, right now, the one thing I can tell you about them, they hate Donald Trump's guts. Mm-hmm. And that's going to become perfectly clear in their campaign. And they're not even going to try to hide it.
Yeah.
The abortion issue is the issue that launched this divide. And that's why the divide isn't going to go away, because people like you and me mm-hmm. can't sit down with somebody who's a pro-abort and say, let's look for common ground, because there is no common ground. You can't partially kill a child.
No.
So we have no common ground with these people. I don't even look for common ground. I think it's stupid to look for it. We have no common ground with them. And to be honest with you, I don't want common ground with them. My job is not to seek common ground with baby killers. My job is to stop them. Mm-hmm. And just as I wouldn't go back to 1938 and ask a Jewish family to sit down with their neighbor who runs a concentration camp and look for common ground, can you imagine how stupid you would sound mm-hmm. if you said, let's sit down with the Jewish leadership and the Nazis and the Jews sit down and look for common ground? You can't do it. There's some issues that transcend that issue. And I guarantee you that is what Jesus was talking about when he said, I did not come to bring peace. I came to bring a sword. And I'm going to separate this family member from that family member, husbands from wives, fathers from sons, because there would be certain things that you just can't compromise on.
Yep.
And abortion started this whole thing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, make sure you subscribe to the show. If you have a show suggestion, let us know. There'll be a form at lifedynamics.com/podcast. Just leave your show suggestion there.
Or if you disagree, be sure and let us know. Mm-hmm. We'll make a show out of it. We'll have you on maybe by phone or something. But if you disagree with us on any of this stuff, just let us know. Let us hear from you. We want to know because this show is your show and we want to make it serve your purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's it. Till next Thursday, remember, Life Dynamics is not here to put up a good fight.
Mm-mm, we're here to win.
Because winning is how the killing stops. We'll see you next week.
Bye, guys.